I wanted first to give an overview of the Haggadah, the various parts of the Haggadah, what the intent of the various parts is, and I often wonder person would take a book, a major book from one of the world's major writers, and his whole life spent just rereading the Hakdamah, the preface. Imagine someone came to look at one of Shakespeare's plays, and in his whole life he just studied the Hakdamah, the preface. The main body of the text he ran through without much focus. But the Hakdamah, he knows inside out every nuance. But the play itself, he never really dwelled upon. We think it's rather peculiar. I mean, so, the preface is only there to get us to the play. If that's all the effort that you put into the preface, so what ought you do with the main body of the work? And yet, when it comes to the Haggadah, I don't know whom to blame. I don't know if I'm supposed to blame the Cheder Rabbeim, this country, in Europe. I don't even know. I can't figure out how far back I'm supposed to trace it. I don't know. But we teach the Haggadah in a very strange fashion. The Gemara says, what's mentioned in the Gemara? So the Gemara mentions the Manashtana, that's mentioned in the Gemara. Mas Chub Gnusa Messiah Mesheva, so that relates to the paragraphs of Avod the Ma'in of the Far of Mitzrayim, Yotzein Hashem Elokeinu Mishlo, Matchil Oivdei Avod Zoro Ayva, Sahayu Avoseinu, that's also in the Gemara. And the Gemara tells us what's the essence of the Haggadah itself. It's to be Dorish, the parish of Arami Oivid Ovi, which is the central portion of the Haggadah. Yet, if I asked anyone if he ever learned anything more than a smattering of the parsha of Arami Ovid Ovi in school, and all the time that he spent learning Haggadah, I don't think one person in 1,000 can raise his hand. We do a tremendous job in the Hakdama. Kiddush, Lachmanya, Mashtana, Avodimayinu, Arbavonim. Once we get up to the Parsha Barami Yavir Ovi, that's it, we fade out. That's the time to get on the bicycle and start going. After Vehisha Omda, that's it. Until then, the amount of Vertloch that we've studied in school, our children have studied in school, is endless. After that, from Tzeil Uman and on, few and far between. It's very strange, because I'll tell us that the essence of the Haggadah is Arami Yavir Ovi. So now we need to keep in mind that we ought to be focused on this parasha. That's the essence of the Haggadah. The Haggadah has a number of parts to it. It has Kiddush, and Kiddush is not merely peripheral. You could say, well, Kiddush is a mitzvah. Every Yontif begins with Kiddush. Every Shabbos begins with Kiddush. Doesn't work that way. V'horaya l'kach. The Kiddush, if Kiddush were merely a din of Kabbalah Yontif or Kabbalah Shabbos, like every Shabbos, so I could make Kiddush after Plaga Mincha and fulfill the din. And yet Tosfos says, and that's the halacha, that the first kais I can only drink after Tzeitzah Kochavim. Why? Because it's part of the Seder. The Seder is at night. Ochlu wasabosa balayla hazen, Torah writes in Parashas Bo. So since this is the first of the four kaises, as the Gemara reckons in Ari Pesachim, says to be balayla. So the Kiddush, not merely the drinking of the kais, but the Kiddush itself is a chalik. Is a chalik of the Haggadah itself. So that's part one. Now, the whole idea that we do things ala kais, the kiddush ala kais, avdola ala kais, the chasnus ala kais, this whole notion, where does it come from? Taisus indicates that it really stems from the Migdash. In the Migdash there was a principle, I mean Shira ala ala yayin, that Shira had to be associated with yayin in the Migdash. And that's a very common theme throughout the world, that for Haido, you make a toast. That's the notion of Koshal Brocha comes from there. That's what's apparent in Taisus. Which in effect tells us that every time there's Koshal Brocha, there's some Haido that's involved. It's the Indian of the Kais, otherwise there's no Indian of Kais. Kais is Haido, Shira. Kiddush and Yom Tov is very easy, particularly Pesach. The essence of Yetzias Mitzrayim is one very, very simply. Asher Kiddushonu b'Mitzvayso. That's the essence of Yetzias Mitzrayim. We did not leave Mitzrayim merely to be a free people, to pursue a national existence in and of itself, but rather to serve the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Rosh Holon Shvadron Zatzal states that the Medrash is rather perplexing. Rashi cites it in Chumash. 4/5 of the Jewish people were Hamushim Olu B'nai Yisroel Me'eretz Mitzrayim. 4/5 of the people, 80% decided they'll stay in Mitzrayim. They have no need to follow Moshe Rabbeinu. This the inference in the Medrash and its implication of the Medrash is that it was for this chet in and of itself that they succumbed. Not necessarily for anything else. And the truth is there's a logic to that. Because as the Malachim said, that Kriyas Yamsuf, Halolu Ovdi Avay Dezor, Halolu Ovdi Avay Dezor. So, it's very hard. We're going to have to find different levels of involvement in the Avay Dezor, some that are worthy and some that are unworthy. So the question is, he asked very simply, merely because a person didn't want to leave Mitzrayim. This is why didn't they want to leave Mitzrayim? They were comfortable in Mitzrayim. They were people that were part of the Egyptian bureaucracy, Jewish people. They made a nice bit of money in Mitzrayim. They had a nice position. So it served their interest to stay in this society. So this is such an avla. For that avla, the Rebbeinu Shlom took their life. I mean, in Golas Bavel, a much greater percentage of the people probably did not want to return to Eretz Yisrael. And yet we don't find an Einish. He says, why didn't they want to leave Mitzrayim? Very simply. And that's because Moshe Rabbeinu told them that Shalach Hasami V'Yavduni. Where are we going to? We're going to receive a Torah from the Rebbeinu Shel Olam that's going to dictate how we live. So they made a calculation. Life is comfortable now and relatively successful. What do we have to trade this in for a new type of Abdus for? So, in effect, that decision was not only, this was not the pocketbook decision, this was a philosophical decision. That they are more comfortable serving in a bureaucracy under the limitations of Mitzrayim than serving the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. And that was the chet. The essence of Yetzias Mitzrayim is Asher Kedishonu B'Mitzvayso. It's Mitchila Oivdi Avoid Zoro Hayu Avosainu, Vaachshav Karvonu Hamokam Lavoid Asim. So we begin with Haido. Haido can only be understood by contrast. A person that lived a very triumphant life, from the time he was born to the time he died, he was triumphant in everything. Super successful. He never had a setback in his life. He was born into a wealthy and powerful family. And every single thing in life went exactly the way he wanted. From the beginning until the end. Such a person can have very little insight into being thankful for what he has. That's life in his book. there's no point of comparison to see that that doesn't have to be life. A person that struggles in life, comes from an impoverished background, he struggled, he had personal difficulties, he overcomes those difficulties, and then he's successful. Such a person understands the meaning of the success. He can appreciate that which he's accomplished. He doesn't take it for granted. It doesn't come by itself. For that reason, the very beginning of the Haggadah has, right after Kiddush we proclaim, what is the night all about? That's the essence of the Yontif. That's the proclamation of, Kiddush is a proclamation of Shabbos and Yontif, what this day is about. And all of it, including Shabbos, includes Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvah Yisov. Different mitzvahs, but all Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvah Yisov. But immediately after that, what do we go to? Let's look. Three things. Because if we do not grasp where we're coming from, we can never grasp what we have accomplished. Therefore, at the very beginning of the Haggadah, we have Karpas, and we have Yachatz. The most famous explanation, albeit not the only explanation of Karpas, the Kolbo's explanation, is that it's dipped in salt water, Zecher L'Avdus, to the difficulties that we experienced in Mitzrayim. What comes right after that is Yachatz. Yachatz is we take a half a matzah. Why is that? Because we really incorporate two different versions, two different aspects. Lechem is, the Torah writes Lechem only, but only should have been spelled Ayin Vav Nun Yud. Instead, it's written Ayin Nun Yud. Gemara tells us that it really has a dual meaning. On one hand, it's lechem sha'inim alav dorim harvi. Normally, we have a concept that we give haydo alakos. Kiddush is alakos. Because the suman is alakos. Shavu brachos is alakos. Alakos. Very common. Pesach, instead of alakos, we have alamatzah. The haydo is connected to matzah. That's the idea of lechem sha'inim alav dorim harvi. We don't use a kais in and of itself. The matzah is the primary tool of the haidor. But there's a second meaning, since it's spelled ayin nun yud. It also, the Gemara tells us, which spells oni, it is lechem of aniyim, of poor people. Poor people ate a very humble bread. That's what we ate in Mitzrayim. The Ibn Ezra even writes that in some places in the world where he traveled, that a form of matzah was the food that was given to Avodim. It was grain and it was nourishing, and on the other hand, one can't digest it too quickly, so the prisoners didn't get hungry too fast. So it was very utilitarian for the jailers. So we break the matzah, so the matzah is to tell us what? Is lechem oini, that we didn't have to break it for, but for lechem oni, lechem of aniyim, we had to break it. If we don't focus on the fact that the matzah is lachma anya, then we missed. We can't appreciate the Seder. We can't even begin the Haidah. What do we do after? As soon as the Haggadah puts that into the text, right after we break the matzah, we recite, and in many minhagim we pick up the broken piece of matzah. Halachma anya bi'achola avasana bara de Mitzrayim. We went through aniyas, very harsh aniyas, servitude. After we finish that part, so we focused already twice on the difficulties, then we begin Magid. Magid begins with the Manashtana. Why? Because the Torah writes, Ki yushalcha vincha mocha lemur. The Seder is not only an intellectual experience, it is not carved, it's indelible impression in the Jewish soul as an intellectual experience. It's carved its impression because it's a dramatic experience. It is unique. It stands apart. The emotion that's inherent in it, that in the gathering of families across multi-generational, that experience is one. There's no person that's been in a Seder with his intimate family that can forget that experience. A person could have experienced it 50, 60 years before, but it left its mark. It is very unique. It is dramatic. It's emotional. Questions and answers are good for the intellectual process, but they're even more important for the emotional aspect. Because in a question-answer process, it becomes more poignant. Points strike more deeply. We begin Maggid after Lechem Ayini. Because then we can first begin to appreciate what it is that the Rabbeinu Shalom has done for us. We came, from rags to riches. Only if I remember that I was once in rags can I appreciate the riches. That will be repeated later when we come to the mitzvahs halayla, have the very same format. We have matzah and more. It's a contrast. Because only from that contrast do we understand what the matzah is. Talk about freedom, I'm free. Matzah is a sign also of cheiros. The sign of the Korban Pesach. Sliyeshu matzah samrorim yochlu. When eaten by the Korban Pesach, it's the sign of cheiros. Vayofu asabotzeh asherotziyo mimitzrayim. This was the matzah, not of the avdus, but matzah of cheiros. But what's cheiros? Only if I know why Moror was Chayayim. If I know what came before. The essence of the experience is to give Hayda to the Rabbeinu Shalom. The Haggadah goes on. Maschil b'gnusa Messiah b'shevach is really the very same notion. To which the Mishnah says, we start with the degradation of Klal Yisrael and then discuss our victories, our triumph. If I don't understand Avodah Mayinu Lefarah B'Mitzrayim, then I don't understand Vayitzeinu Hashem Elokeinu Mishlam. If I don't understand Metchila Oivdei Avodah Zorah Hoyu Avoseinu, then I don't know what it means of Achshav Karvonu Hamokum La'Avodosa. It's a very striking story that I read of the Klausenberger Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He was brought to the Warsaw Ghetto on Erev Shavuos for the purpose of tearing down the buildings which had been shattered in the combat in the Warsaw Ghetto, together with a slave labor group of Jews. The work was extremely perilous because the buildings could cave in on them at any moment and kill all of them. And there was a non-from Jew that was in this work gang together with the Klausenberger Rebbe, and he said, Rabbina, tonight you're going to recite Atah B'chartanu too. And the Klausenberger Rebbe answered him, says, tonight I will recite Atah B'chartanu with more intensity and fervor than I ever did in my entire life. And his questioner looked at him as if he'd blown his mind. Here we're being destroyed by Germany, Yimach Shalom B'Zichron. Look at where we're up to. And tonight you're going to say Atah V'Chartanu with fervor? So the Klausenberger Rebbe said, I will tell you why. I realize now that if not for the Rabbeinu Shalom's Torah, I could just as likely be one of the murderers than be one of the victims. And realizing what the human being can do without the Rabbeinu Shalom's Torah, I will thank the Rabbeinu Shalom more intensely than ever for the Torah that the Rabbeinu Shalom gave us. Only from that perspective could we appreciate that which we have. We realize what the alternatives are. One should never have to realize it in the way that the Klausenberger Rebbe Zatzal did. But a person of his enormous amunah, even under those conditions, saw a depth and appreciation of the Shekhinah. The society as a whole struggles over its history with varied notions of education. Education, ultimately, is viewed as necessary for society. If society is to succeed, then we have to have an educated citizenry. Yeah. The question though arises, to what extent does the citizenry have to be educated? So we make tremendous investments in higher education in this country, and particularly in the graduate level, tremendous investments. Why? Because we realize the highly trained personnel that come forth are the backbone of everything that goes on, the science and the technology of the entire country, those people. And over the generations, in many places, there's been a notion that it's enough to educate elites. More recently in the Western world, we've come to a notion of mass education. For varied reasons, it's hard really to know exactly why. In one sense, it's this notion of liberalism. In another sense, it's we realize that we need to succeed as a society, we need everybody. We can't afford to have an underclass in society which is non-productive. It's too much of a drag on society. We want productive citizens. Klal Yisrael, throughout its history, our perspective was that we want to educate everyone. Not only the elites, but the average person. And not only the average person, but the person that's far below average. In a very striking statement in the Gemara in Erevin, the Gemara tells us that Rav Preda, one of the Amoraim, he had a Talmud. And he used to recite the Shir with him. He reviewed it 400 times each day until this Talmud grasped the Shir. One day he finished these 400 times of his 400 reviews with him. And the Talmud still didn't know the Shir. So we asked him, I don't think it was any more difficult today than any other day, so what happened? He says, what happened is that I knew the Rebbe was invited to a simcha today. And I thought that you would leave before we finished the right amount of chazor. So I would never know the lesson any of, so I really didn't pay attention properly. So it says, Rav Preda says, okay, I'm going to review a second 400 times with you. And I'm not leaving you until we finish. So we finished. And he grasped the lesson. So Basco came forth and said, if a praetor should want a schus, he wants a schus for the entire door. He said, a schus for the entire door. Yeah. I can only describe this student with only one type of term. He was learning disabled. Now, exactly why he was learning disabled, I don't know. The Gemara doesn't tell me whether he was dyslexic or he had a processing problem. I don't really know what his problem was. But we cannot describe him as being anything else other than learning disabled. And yet, Rav Preda Amir, who had obviously a lot to do with his time, felt that even such a child cannot be ignored. He's Jewish. Whatever the effort that's necessary that he should learn the Rabbeinu Shalom Torah, that also has to be done. Because our model was inclusive. We celebrate the founding of yeshivas. Because initially in Jewish history, the Gemara tells us, parents taught children. But not everyone had a father that was capable. There were orphans, there were people whose parents were ill, economic circumstances. So the Gemara tells us that someone had the insight to start schools. We'll remember him fondly throughout our history. For what purpose? So that there should be no exception. The child from the unfortunate circumstances should also be educated. That's the essence of what we do. Is what we proclaim. There are four possibilities of what the child may be. The child may be a chacham. He's bright, incisive, insightful. One type of child. Interested, enthusiastic, a chacham. He can be a Rasha. Disinterested, cynical. He can be a Tam. Meaning someone who's very simple. His mind grasps things in a very simple fashion. and there's no depth. The most he can get out is mazo, say, what's going on. But there's no analysis of anything beyond that. And then we have perhaps what's even worse than Mefarshim tell us than the Tam. That's the Shein Yodei Lishom, in effect. It's apathetic altogether. He doesn't, can't even ask mazos. He's at psachlo. Why? Kiyisholcho vincho mocho leimar. It's irrelevant to us what that bincho is. V'higata lebincho. The Torah doesn't say, even that he has to ask. V'higata lebincho. If he doesn't ask, it's v'higata lebincho. At psachlo. Every child, every Jew, is to be connected with the heritage. And the linchpin of our heritage is Yetzias Mitzrayim. So there's no child, no one, that can be left out. Our notion of education was all-encompassing, that every child is to be included, to be involved. In the Haggadah, we talk about chesed of the Rabbeinu Shlomo. But not only chesed from of Mitzias Mitzrayim, but chesed, which has accompanied our entire history. Lovim bikish lakor asakol. Lovim wished to destroy us before we got started. The Rabbeinu Shlomo speared us from that as well. The realization that we have to consider all the travail of the Jewish people before we consider our success. Is Vayogar Shom Lamech Lo Yora Yaakov Avinu Lishtakeh V'Mitzrayim V'Lo Lo Goshom Yitzias Mitzrayim B'gam Aser Agoy Asher Yavodu Don Anochi is the prototype of every Golus and Geula that will happen in all of Jewish history. And therefore, Vayogosham, the very essence how this Golus took place, is Melamech Layor Yaakov Avinu Lishtakeh B'Mitzrayim Alo Logosham. To tell us that in Golus, we're not anxious to live there. The area may be beautiful, beautiful landscapes, nice weather, good economic opportunity. Yaakov Avinu had all of those available. He was going to the wealthiest and most powerful country in the world when he came to Mitzrayim. His son was the viceroy of Egypt. Whatever he wanted was his. But Yaakov Avinu, he was not interested in living there. Lo Lo Goshom. This is a stop. It's a hotel along the way. And Vayera Mitzrayim was onus apiyadiv. The Rebbeinu Shel forced them to go. Forced them. If he hadn't forced them, he would have stayed in Eretz Canaan. The circumstances became too harsh. It was impossible. Golus is a station along the way. We need always to keep that in focus. The Mishkan, Yesh Asher Yiyah, the times that it stayed for a long time. In Kodesh, they stayed for 19 years in Kodesh, Rashi tells us. The Mishkan didn't move. Kodesh, they stayed for 19 years without moving. Other places could be a day, but it's all a stop, long stops and short stops. But we don't live where we are now. We're in transit. If the plane stops in Paris on the way somewhere to a business trip, I don't ask myself why I don't speak French. I don't ask myself why I don't eat French food, why I don't dress like the Frenchman. I'm not a Frenchman. I'm passing through. It's not our place. We have to make the best of the circumstances and thank the Rebbeinu Shlomo for it, but we always need in Golus the realization of Logur Ba'aretz Bono. We go into a lengthy exhortation. It tells us that the Rebbeinu Shlomo the Rabbeinu Shalom answered the tefillah. The Ramban writes that Na'oka is like Nakas Cholo, the cry of a person that's mortally wounded. It means the tefillah did not come from a sense of tshuva. and of longing for the Rabbeinu Shalom, it was nakas cholom. It was the cry of a person that's suffering. And that the Rabbeinu Shalom accepted as a tefillah too. In Golos, the Rabbeinu Shalom does not always ask of us to serve him at the highest level. Lav bedafka. Whatever we're capable of, we cry. The Klal Yisrael cried out to the Rabbeinu Shalom from their suffering and from their pain. Not as a religious exercise in and of itself, of a newfound moon under the Rabbeinu Shalom. But that's enough before the Rabbeinu Shalom. It's a very long parsha that we darshan. We come to parts which very clearly express the Haidah. Even the very curious part of the Haggadah, when we have the contrast between the Makkos in Mitzrayim, which are Etz Balokim, and the Makkos on Yamsuf, which are Yaralokim, right, we saw as Ayora Chazoka. So the question is for what purpose? And there we have an entire debate with the 10 Makkos and 50 Makkos, 40 Makkos and 200 Makkos, 50 Makkos and 250 Makkos. For what reason? What's this debate about? And the debate really is one very simple thing. The question is the extent of the Haidah that we're obligated to give. We have to thank the Rabbeinu Shalom commensurate with the Nisan that the Rabbeinu Shalom gave for us. That's the essence of the whole mitzvah's market, and that's the essence of the Seder. So the Tanaim debates how many Chasdei Hashem there were that we have to thank him for. And each one sought to magnify it to the greatest extent possible, to increase to the maximum the Chiyuv of Haidah, to thank the Rabbeinu Shalom. We come to the second case. The second case, we specifically make a bracha shagalona regardless of asenu. We've looked to a large extent in Gulas Mitzrayim at the process, what took place. The Rabbeinu Shalom redeemed us. We make a bracha in association with it. But it reflects logor ba'aretz bono. Because what are we asked the Rabbeinu Shalom in that bracha? For what? To celebrate the Korban Pesach. We had this Seder. It's a very important and inspiring event. But this is only Bezer Anpin. This is only in the smaller, a reflection of the real Seder. And we'll come to Yerushalayim. We'll be makro with Korban Pesach. And the Korban Pesach will be, that will be the centerpiece of the Korban. Of the Seder, of the Maggid, of the Korban Pesach. Sliyeshu Matzah, Samarorim Yochlu. The Korban Pesach plays a primary role in the Maggid. So we ask the Rabbeinu Shalom, Logur Va'aretz Bono. This is all nice. But this is transient. Something else. The Suda itself is also the Netziv. A very beautiful explanation. Why is it, in fact, that we break up the Challah? In the middle of the Challah, whether according to the Beis Shammai, after the first paragraph, after the first two paragraphs, then we stop and we eat a Suda. After the Suda, we go back again and we finish the Challah. Very strange. Yeah. I think next time, listen, the Rosh Chodesh davening is long. So I think the next time at Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, I'm stopping the Challah in the middle, after we get to the Almayna Moyim. And then we'll go down, we'll make Kiddush, we'll have a big Kiddush, a hot Kiddush, and then we'll come up and we'll start Vayta, you know, what's the problem, you know. Davening's long, you know. So what in the world did we do? In the middle of Challah, all of a sudden, boom, stop, that's all. Then we sit to eat, a lavish meal, and then, okay, now bench, oh, now we're ready to begin, what happened? So the Tziv says the reason is very simple. Because what Chazal wished to emphasize was the Suda itself is Haidah, just as a Korban Taidah. And therefore, we put it smack in the middle of Challah, because it is no less Haidah to the Rabbeinu Shalom than the Challah itself. The format is different, but the purpose is exactly the same. So, reminiscent of a Korban Taida, the feel of the Korban Pesach, the Yesudas Yontif. The second part of the Haggadah, part of it I'll come to, Be'ez Hashem and Shabbos Haggadah. But the first theme of the second part, we finish the Hallel. But we start Shvei Chamos Cholagoyim Mashalo Yedaucha. We have the various piyutim which come at the end of the Haggadah, Yivne Beis HaMakoriv, Echad Miyodeya, Chad Gadya, Lashon Abba Yerushalayim. All of these, and even in Chasal Siddur Pesach, Keniske Lasoso, Korov Nile Nitechana, Puduyim Litzion Verino. Pesach, we express the past, but we also express the future too. The seeds of the Geula are in Yetzias Mitzrayim. And there will be a Geula, which is rooted in the Geulas Mitzrayim, the Nesivos tells us. And therefore we talk about not only the Benisan Nigalu, but the Nisan Asidun Ligal, the Geula Asidun. There's a very strong messianic aspect to the second part of the Haggadah. Shiach, the Migdash, these are major themes of the second half of the Haggadah. Of course, the Arba Kaisis in the Rishonim, the Tosfos tells us Arba Kaisis have a dual meaning. We all know the Drash, Rashi and the Rashbam cited at the beginning of Arba Pesachim, Motzei Mitzalti V'Galti V'Lokachti, referring to Yetzias Mitzrayim. But Tosfos traces that there are four kaisas of Tarela, four kaisas of bitterness, of poison that the Rabbanu Shel Olam will give the non-Jewish oppressors at the time of Mashiach. And that's also part of the remez of the Dalet kaisas. The Dalet kaisas themselves are retrospective and they are prospective, both. And then there's the Haidah of the second part. The Gomer Yom Alavas HaHalel, the Nishmas, what we call Halal HaGodl, Haidu, Kiliyodah Hashem Kitov Kiliyodah Chastoy, all of that. And the truth of the matter is, we do not pay much careful attention to the latter part of the Haggadah. After we darshan so much at the first part, after we drank four kaisas already, after we drank a suda, and after Erev Pesach, who has the koyach to think too much about what the last part is? So, but the last part deals really with a great deal of the Haidah that's inherent in the themes of the Seder, Halal, and all that's associated with it. Be'ez Hashem and Shabbos HaGadol in the Drosha, I intend to explore dafka the very last part. The very last part of the Haggadah. The Gemara states, Kais Chamishi, and Kais Chamishi, it's the text of the Gemara, Imre Malov, they say the Halal Haggadah. There are various debates on what exactly we say in association. And it's not such an unusual text. The Rambam has this text. The Rif has this text, the Rabbeinu Hananel has this text, the Rashbam had it and he crossed it out of his Gemara. But in many Rishayim had five cases. And not because of the reason of Hevesi, that I'll tell you. But that needs careful examination, and Shabbos HaGadol will examine it. Different elements of the last part. And I also started to contemplate. We have, depending what Haggadah you use and what the Messiah is, how do we end the end bracha for all the Haidah? At the end of all the Halal, the Nishmas and everything, which Haidah, which Chasimah do we use? The Halalucha? Or the Chasimah of Melech Teochei Olam, the Chasimah for Ishtavach? Where exactly we make it? There are varied minhagim. Because there are varied elements to the Haidah at the end of the Seder. So in essence, it is a structure of Haidu, which works in contrasts of Avdus and Chayrus to make its point. That's why even in the Manish Tana, the Manish Tana has both. The Manish Tana talks about the things which are different because of Chayrus, Matzah, and Haseva, and it talks about the things which are different because of Avdus. More, we eat more, and the Tibulum, which, according with the explanation of the Kolbo, the Tibul represents Avdus. The Charoses is also representative of Avdus, of Tit. So the questions themselves play off both of those themes. Some, in fact, even interpret. Some even interpret that's the essence of the question. That we can have celebrations of Avdus, we can have Tisha B'Av, we can have celebrations of Chayrus Purim, but why in the world do we have both in one night? That's the point of the four questions. That's some basic notions just of the structure of the Haggadah. I did want to take a look at a few halachas which are relevant. Lav dafka in any particular order, but number one, chometz has to really be put away well. It should be put into a closet, preferably, which is locked and closed, taped up, sealed in some way, so that we don't come to an error to open it up and to take something from it. If we have large possessions of chometz which do not fit into a closet, so they really have to be covered over in some very secure fashion. It's not enough in tied boxes, taped boxes, something. And the halacha says, for example, merely even to put up like a flimsy curtain which one can just walk through and reach the chometz is inappropriate. Chometz has to be put away in some secure fashion that we're not likely, even by mistake, to bump into it and to deal with it. Now, it's also the halacha says that one has to put the chometz to kekalim away well also. Very important. Take all the chometz to kekalim, put them in some unused part of the basement or wherever it is, and cover them over. Don't leave them just hanging around. I had a shiloh a number of years ago where somebody made a mistake in a family where they brought up one of the chometz to kekalim before Achron Shal Pesach by mistake, and they used it a whole day for the cooking. All day it was used. It was not used on the fire. It's Baruch Hashem, it proved to be salvageable, the situation. But one doesn't want that to happen. And the Chachamim say we should put away the clay chametz, take the bottle, box them, bag them, cover them, so that we don't by mistake wind up using them. Now, we need to look in places that we tend to keep chametz in, talis bags, pocketbooks, pockets in general. But pockets, fortunately, are pretty limited in what we have to do. Because anything that we've recently either washed or dry cleaned, we don't have to worry about what's in the pockets. So it's only, in the coat closet is likely. Coats are big pockets, too. On the way to work, one never knows what one puts into that pocket in the morning. And so only a few suits and dresses, perhaps, that we didn't clean recently. Yeah.
What about in the great front? Let's say you have dishes that, let's say they were used for candidates or whatever, but like your great front, you have to cover your great front?
No. When the Torah says that chometz is by yiron, by yimotzei, that only means that we should not own chometz. There is no restriction in the Torah at looking at chometz. The only thing is, if one has chometz to kekalim, one should close them up in some way that one's not likely to use. Yeah, that's enough. Yes. So we don't come to use them. Now, in a practical sense, in terms of what we should be doing at Bedikas Chometz, we really need to define what we shouldn't be doing. If it is necessary to search for little tiny crumbs of chametz, is debatable, and one can find in Sifrei Halacha varied viewpoints on this subject. But in the world that we live in, we have no choice other than to follow the Pesach of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the one that's exempt from looking for crumbs. In Baruch Hashem, we're blessed with a multitude of possessions. Now, I guess if we had about 50 rooms in each house so we could spread out very carefully, so the Bidikas Chometz perhaps wouldn't be so much of a problem. But, you know, we tend to live a little bit on the tight side, you know, relative to the space that we have. We don't live in a place in the world, we have a lot of excess space. So therefore, to actually go search for every little crumb that we may have in our possession is a daunting challenge, when we probably have to begin an Isru Chag after Pesach and spend the whole year searching, you know, to do that. So there's little choice but to follow Rav Moshe's Pesach, that one doesn't have to, one only has to search for pieces that are substantial enough that a person might pick them up and eat them, but not tiny crumbs. Now, a person should not bring to the table on Pesach food, svarim that he uses either at the table or he learns with while he eats. Because the halacha on Pesach is very, very severe, very stringent. Now, normally the halacha is I can eat on one table, for example, with a non-Jew who is eating treif, as long as I have some measure of separation between myself and him. A different mat, something to keep us apart. On Pesach, that halacha does not apply. Why? Because we're afraid that maybe one tiny crumb will jump, it'll fall on the table and fall into my food. So therefore, I can't even eat at the same table ever with a person that's eating chametz. So certainly for us to bring svarim to the table that we used around food during the year is inappropriate. Now obviously from that, the benches that we used, the birkonim, we should have separate ones for Pesach. We shouldn't even bother to try to clean them. But it's a bracha l'vatolah to attempt to clean them in the first place. One could never get them sufficiently clean from all the mashu of chometz that have fallen into them and are hiding in the binding. Just take them and put them away, and keep them away, or put them away with the chometz. Don't even take them out on Yom Tov. Now, just one notion, in that it is certainly the Ramah states that the beer chametz should be done before the bittul chametz, because we should be mevayer chametz that's us, and once we mevatel it, that would suggest that it's not us. And the same may be true. I mean, in terms even probably if one could do the beer chametz before the mechiras chametz, would probably also not be a bad idea for that reason. Because the same way that the Ramah was not so pleased that we should just keep out a piece of chametz and not be mevatel it, so our bittul should go on everything, so the mechira pasha should go on everything too. So we would be better advised if we burn the chametz before the mechira, rather than to say, well, I'm keeping this outside the mechira. And what happens if we keep it outside the mechira, we don't succeed in burning it for some reason? Which could happen, a person could forget. Then what's going to happen? Not so simple. So, consequently, these are some points, you know, to keep in mind. In general, I mean, we don't rely that much on bittul chametz. Bittul chametz we only use really as a stopgap measure, as a backup. To the extent that the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tov Mem Ches cites the Rishalmi, that if a person only did bittul chametz, and he didn't, for example, do mechiras chametz, and he finds chametz after Pesach, someone would say, well, listen, what's the problem? He didn't violate Vayiro or Vayimotzi. But the Shulchan Aruch records a halacha that one may not have any benefit from that food. And it's not because I suspect. I did a bittul, I'm a good Jew. It's true. But bittul is inherently a slippery slope. Can we be sure at every time that every single person is mevatel the way he ought to be mevatel? You know, I may have an affinity for a certain type of chametz. Somebody brought me, they went to Scotland and they brought me a good bottle, you know, Ireland, and they brought me like a good bottle of whiskey. One that I waited, you know, I know for 20 years that there's such a type of whiskey, and I found it was zeichet to get it. I'm so ready to be mevatel it. Not so clear. And varied, each person has their thing that they have their weakness for. So the halacha set a high bar. So these are just some thoughts on Mechiras Chametz, Bittul Chametz Yerami.
When does the Rav actually do the Mechira?
After this man, Isra Achilas Chametz, that's what I can tell you. So if you do it close to the very right at the end of this man, Isra Achilas Chametz, you're not going to have a problem. I can't tell you exactly, because when it comes to the Mechira, I'm also telling the Biyar Acherim. I have to have the agreement of the other Ravonim too, and they want to come. Okay, Rabbi Yisai, Chakosha B'Sameach.